so the weaker spirits will be assisted and freed from their evil opinions if we entrust to them the accepted principles of philosophy. And you may understand how essential these principles are in the following way. Certain things sink into us, rendering us sluggish in some ways and hasty in others. These two qualities, the one of recklessness and the other of sloth, cannot be respectively checked or roused unless we remove their causes, which are mistaken admiration and mistaken fear. As long as we are obsessed by such feelings, you may say to us, "You owe this duty to your father, this to your children, this to your friends, this to your guests." But greed will always hold us back, no matter how we try. A man may know that he should fight for his country, but fear will dissuade him. A man may know that he should sweat forth his last drop of energy on behalf of his friends, but luxury will forbid. A man may know that keeping a mistress is the worst kind of insult to his wife, but lust will drive him in the opposite direction. It will therefore be of no avail to give precepts unless you first remove the conditions that are likely to stand in the way of precepts. It will do no more good than to place weapons by your side and bring yourself near the foe without having your hands free to use those weapons. The soul, in order to deal with the precepts which we offer, must first be set free. Suppose that a man is acting as he should. He cannot keep it up continuously or consistently, since he will not know the reason for so acting. Some of his conduct will result rightly because of luck or practice, but there will be in his hand no rule by which he may regulate his acts, and which he may trust to tell him whether that which he has done is right. One who is good through mere chance will not give promise of retaining such a character forever. Furthermore, precepts will perhaps help you to do what should be done, but they will not help you to do it in the proper way. And if they do not help you to this end, they do not conduct you to virtue. I grant you that, if warned, a man will do what he should. But that is not enough, since the credit lies not in the actual deed, but in the way it is done. What is more shameful than a costly meal which eats away the income even of a knight? Or what so worthy of the censor's condemnation as to be always indulging oneself and one's inner man, if I may speak as the gluttons do? And yet often has an inaugural dinner cost the most careful man a cool million. The very sum that is called disgraceful, if spent on the appetite, is beyond reproach, if spent for official purposes. For it is not luxury, but an expenditure sanctioned by custom. a mullet of monstrous size, was presented to the Emperor Tiberius. They say it weighed 4.5 pounds. And why should I not tickle the palates of certain epicures by mentioning its weight? Tiberius ordered it to be sent to the fish market and put up for sale, remarking, "I shall be taken entirely by surprise, my friends, if either Apicius or P. Octavius does not buy that mullet." The guess came true beyond his expectation. The two men bid, and Octavius won, thereby acquiring a great reputation among his intimates, because he had bought for 5,000 sesterces a fish which the emperor had sold, and which even Apicius did not succeed in buying. To pay such a price was disgraceful for Octavius, but not for the individual who purchased the fish in order to present it to Tiberius, though I should be inclined to blame the latter as well, but at any rate he admired a gift of which he thought Caesar worthy. When people sit by the bedsides of their sick friends, we honor their motives. But when people do this for the purpose of attaining a legacy, they are like vultures waiting for carrion. The same act may be either shameful or honorable. The purpose and the manner make all the difference. Now, each of our acts will be honorable if we declare allegiance to honor, and judge honor and its results to be the only good that can fall to man's lot. For other things are only temporarily good. I think, then, that there should be deeply implanted a firm belief which will apply to life as a whole. This is what I call a doctrine. And as this belief is, so will be our acts and our thoughts. As our acts and our thoughts are, so